TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. What climate change data can tell us about the emergence and spread of diseases. On January 24, 2017, Marketplace, the American Public Media radio program, reported that the Center for Disease Control abruptly canceled a long-scheduled climate summit. It was set to take place in February in Atlanta.
A conference to discuss climate change hurting public health is off, at least for now. The Centers for Disease Control began notifying participants of an indefinite postponement late last month. Some see an early change in the political winds when it comes to climate. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Jed Kim reports.
With climate change, a lot of attention goes to structural concerns, like the need to deal with rising sea levels. But Regina Shi of the RAND Corporation says there are myriad health effects, too.
Temperature-related death and illness. There are also air quality impacts. We've seen increases in Zika as well as other vector-borne diseases.
Plus water-related sickness, food security. She's got a long list. It's a lot of things the CDC typically worries about. Howard Frumkin is a former director of the National Center for Environmental Health at the CDC.
This is basic bread-and-butter public health. Anticipate the hazard, understand how the hazard operates, and then protect people. If we pull the plug on that, then people are at risk.
Frumkin's worried politics pushed CDC leadership to cancel its Climate and Health Summit. In a written statement, the agency said it's considering rescheduling, but that it's also considering budget priorities. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
That was the Marketplace Morning Report of January 24, 2017. On the same day, Breitbart News, formerly run by the senior Trump advisor Steve Bannon, wrote, "The CDC cancellation is unquestionably a result of the Trump effect." The CDC is one of many U.S. federal agencies which have been forced rapidly to adjust their priorities. From CDC to NASA to departments from the Interior to Defense, agencies are infiltrated by green entryists from below and encouraged by irresponsible prioritizing from above. They have engaged in climate change activism, which has nothing at all to do with their core mission. And Breitbart News continues, "The CDC is a particularly egregious example of this environmentalist mission creep. Founded in 1946, its job is to protect public health and safety through the control and prevention of disease. What does climate change have to do with this? Nothing. The evidence that man-made climate change is damaging to human health is at best flimsy, at worst fabricated." That was Breitbart News from January 24, 2017. This exchange caught my attention because I had seen research done at the Center for Disease Control and in public health departments at universities that has factored in climate change as cause or multiplier of disease, going back as long as three decades. That research includes data from temperature and sea level rise and increases in carbon dioxide. Matching and mapping these basic data with health data show patterns and opportunities to predict, mitigate, and intervene in order to protect people. Public health has already paid attention and responded to the impact of climate change in heat waves, extreme weather events, air quality, food production, and displacement of peoples. And they consider how climate change affects a large number of diseases that may be accelerated or moved into areas previously free from them, such as malaria, encephalitis, Hunter virus, Rift Valley fever, West Nile virus, cholera, and harmful algae blooms in warming waters, and more. that an administration with a constitutional duty to protect the people would challenge or even eliminate one important factor, i.e. climate change, from the research and data collections of various agencies is cause of very serious concern. And that an agency such as the Center for Disease Control would voluntarily cancel a long-planned conference appears as self-censorship. So here, within the next 20 minutes, is a surprising reaction to the cancellation, a brief portrait of an academic with integrity, plus an example of the very recent climate change work by the Public Health Department at the University of Washington. 2 days after the CDC announced that they were canceling their climate change summit, Scientific American wrote, quote, "The conference is now back on, but not at the CDC. Former Vice President Al Gore will instead convene the event on February 16 at the nonprofit Carter Center in Atlanta. It remains unclear, however, whether any governmental scientists will have the courage to attend or speak. As it becomes known who the scientists are who were prevented from speaking, there will be more programming on TUC Radio on public health and climate change. And of course, as the material from the alternate meeting becomes available." The alternate climate and health meeting will be hosted by Dr. Howard Frumkin, a former director of the National Center for Environmental Health at the CDC. Originally, Frumkin had been scheduled to be a speaker at the now-canceled conference. Dr. Frumkin now teaches at the University of Washington. In November 2016, the School of Public Health at the University of Washington hosted an intimate discussion between faculty, staff, and students on a topic of growing importance to public health under the title, "When the Next Pandemic Strikes, Are We Ready?" Pandemic is an ancient Greek word for all people. It's an epidemic or infectious disease that has spread through human populations across a large region or even worldwide. The first voice you will hear is Sanjay Chheda. He gives a moving definition of public health and also the introduction to Dr. Howard Frumkin.
Good evening. My name is Sanjay Chheda. I'm the vice chair of the School of Public Health's Dean's Council, and I also serve as the school's representative on the UW Foundation Board. So welcome to our third PRISM event. And I think you're really going to enjoy tonight's event. We have a great topic, a very interesting topic about pandemics. When the next pandemic strikes, are we ready? I'd like to just share why I'm so passionate about the School of Public Health and the field in general, why I think it's so interesting and also so important. There's two really distinguishing aspects that I always think about when I'm explaining what public health is to folks. Public health professionals and researchers really look upstream and think about all the things that impact the health of our communities and our society. So public health includes things like the environment, the impact of chemical toxins and pollutants on our health, access to green spaces and how that helps keep us healthy. Things like food safety, the food that we consume, the entire supply chain from farms to grocery stores to restaurants, how do we ensure that food that we consume is safe. Things like gun control and how that impacts our health. And the professionals in this field also think about health at a population level. So not just individuals by individuals that we might need to treat in a medical situation, but how do we think about healthiness of groups, of communities, of entire cities? And that's important to me because we're really all in this together. The health of the people around us impacts our own health, and the more we can live in communities where everyone is healthy and can lead productive lives, the better off that we all are. And so that's what really makes this field so important to me. We also live in global communities, and the environmental decisions made far away in India and China and how they produce electricity and how much coal they're burning, that impacts our health. That impacts the entire planet's health. And as a segue to tonight's topic, pandemics, well, they can start anywhere in the world, and with our very interconnected world, where people can be halfway around the world in 8 hours on a flight, they can spread very, very fast. And that's one of the reasons I think that this topic has gained so much prominence or regained prominence recently. We've had pandemic outbreaks of very, very dramatic diseases like Ebola and Zika recently that spread very quickly around the world. So to get into tonight's plan, I'm very pleased and honored to introduce Howie Frumkin, who is my good friend and also served as the Dean of the School of Public Health from 2010 to 2016. So I've worked with Howie extensively on our Dean's Council. From 2005 to 2010, Howie held leadership roles at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. And tonight, Howie is serving in two capacities. First, to give a brief overview of pandemics and what the UW is planning related to preparedness, and then to discuss his work related to global climate change and human health and pandemics. So without further ado, let's welcome Howie to get tonight started.
Well, thank you, Sanjay, and good evening, everybody. I'm so glad to see old friends here, and I'm so glad to see new friends, and I see a few not yet new friends, so I hope to see you afterwards at the dessert session. I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of the whole story of pandemics. The story begins a long time ago. I was going to show you an incredible description from the Peloponnesian Wars by Thucydides, but I decided to go farther back than that and show you this passage from the Bible. It says, "The Lord will strike you with wasting disease, with fever and inflammation, with scorching heat and drought," and so on. This is almost a clinically precise description of a pandemic disease, the kind of thing that swept through populations with who knows what kind of regularity, but it wasn't unknown to the ancients. It was very well known to the Greeks, and it's been a feature of human history ever since. In recent years, pandemic diseases have broken out across the globe. Some of the diseases that have broken out regionally and globally are long-standing diseases such as anthrax and cholera that reemerge, sometimes in new, unfamiliar forms like the multidrug-resistant TB. Others of the diseases that are emerging are brand new, the Mideast Respiratory Syndrome, Zika, things that have only been around for a few decades or even less. HIV might be the best-known example. Look at the density of where these are occurring, and you'll see that we are not immune being in North America. There are lots of outbreaks around the world, but perhaps the densest area is North America. So this truly is a problem of global proportions, and tackling it is both a matter of global health and a matter of local public health. There's a big literature, so if you like reading science, there are some good books out there to read reflecting the high level of public interest and concern in this issue. And if you like bedwetting terror more than sober science, there's actually a big body of fiction as well. The one I want to call to your attention is, I just noticed this, it's called Presidential Crisis, Ebola. This was a book that was published back when it seemed that Ebola was a bigger threat than presidential crisis. Well, several things drive pandemics as they break out. One is the way they emerge. The next is the way we detect, or in some cases don't detect them as they emerge. And the next is the way they spread once they've emerged. So what drives the emergence of an infectious disease outbreak? The way we live, the proximity that we as humans have with reservoirs of disease, such as animals, has changed. We are an expanding population in geographic terms. We're butting up against animals. The livestock and poultry markets of Asia are a good example. The expansion into forests are a good example. So we are up against where the infectious diseases are. Secondly, a whole range of global changes, such as climate change, change the ecology of infectious diseases and in many cases intensify our exposure and the probability of the development of these diseases. So that's the question of emergence. Once a disease emerges somewhere, and sometimes we don't even know where, how do we know that it has emerged? How do we detect it? Well, we've got several problems. Fragile health systems around the world don't make it easy. These pictures are a little bit symbolic. The picture on the left is a busy clinical facility, and you can well imagine that the providers, the doctors and nurses working in that facility, have all they can do to keep up with caring for patients. Actually, recording patterns of disease, reporting new observations, is often way beyond what they have the capacity to do. On the right, you see a health worker collecting data in a rural setting, writing it down on a piece of paper. That is not the surveillance system that's calculated to provide the most prompt, inaccurate, and complete data. So we often are late to the game when a disease is breaking out. The detection is often suboptimal. And finally, the spread. A number of factors contribute to the risk of a spread of disease, and two of them are shown here. The first is a graph showing the proportion of the world's population that is urban. That blue line that's rising crosses the yellow line in the past decade. The blue line is the urban population, the yellow line is the rural population. We are now a predominantly urban species. We live in close contact with each other in very densely crowded conditions, favoring the spread of diseases. On the right is a picture of one day's airplane flights around the world. And this was from 2012, about 60,000 flights per day. We're up to about 100,000 flights per day now. So the incredible transmission of people, goods, and in some cases microbes around the world contributes to the spread of diseases as well. So what are we doing about this here at UW? Well, the project, it's really more than a project. We're using the term MetaCenter. We are combining six of the different centers at UW that focus on various aspects of pandemic diseases. And the plan is to get us all coordinated in bringing the various skill sets together so that we can tackle this problem. Some specialize in infectious diseases. Some specialize in climate change and other global changes. Some specialize in capacity building and training in low and middle income countries. And bringing all these pieces together, we think, is the best way that we can orchestrate UW's contribution to the question of pandemic disease preparedness. What will we do once we get up and running? Well, there are several challenges that we think we have the capacity here to help meet on a global scale. The first challenge is disease-specific approaches. There have been polio campaigns and cholera campaigns and AIDS campaigns, but really a systems approach is needed so that we have in place the tools to tackle any pandemic disease when it arises. Secondly, we've tended to be responsive rather than anticipatory, and clearly we need the tools and systems in place so that we can anticipate and be proactive with regard to the emergence of diseases, and when they do arise, detect that promptly and act quickly. Third is the limited lead time, the fact that we often are in the midst of a bad outbreak by the time we realize it. Again, the anticipatory tools will help with that. And last, the fragmented response. You've all read stories about the response to calamities such as Zika, where dozens, if not hundreds, of NGOs and foreign governments and others are descending on a place in an uncoordinated fashion. The sophisticated systems that we need to coordinate response are very important, and that is a matter on which we think we can contribute as well. So a wide range of challenges, but a wide range of resources here at the university that we think can help. Well, we're going to move now into the three topics that Sanjay mentioned as potential pieces of this story. The first will be climate change, the second will be the transmission of diseases from animals to humans, and the third will be modeling and forecasting in a geographic context. So for the climate change piece, let me introduce Howard Frumkin, who's going to speak to you on climate change. That would be me. You're all familiar with the climate change story, despite the fact that it was evidently a Chinese confabulation designed to undermine American industry. We actually have amazingly robust data documenting this phenomenon over recent years. This is the famous picture of rising levels of carbon dioxide, due in large part to fossil fuel combustion. That, in turn, has led to a number of Earth system changes. Global temperature, surface temperature, has risen by about 1 degree centigrade over the last century. The global average sea level, rising sea levels are a function of expanding water as the water gets warmer. northern hemisphere snow cover, it's declining as temperatures warm. In addition to these, there are things like more frequent severe storms, drought in some areas, more rain in other areas, a whole system of interrelated, interlocking Earth system changes. And those, in turn, have a lot of implications for human health. So you'll see phenomena such as air pollution, severe weather, and extreme heat, all following directly from the geophysical changes that characterize climate change. Those, in turn, lead to a whole series of human health threats, ranging from diminished nutrition to severe heat waves. But the ones we want to talk about in the context of tonight's program are infectious diseases. Now, those fall into two major categories: diarrheal disease, cholera. These are the so-called water and food-borne diseases that typically affect people through the GI system, causing diarrheal illnesses of various kinds. The other family of infectious diseases, and the one that I'll focus on now, is the so-called vector-borne diseases, malaria, dengue, and so on, spread by vectors such as mosquitoes, ticks, flies, and so on. Now, climate change directly contributes to the spread of these diseases in a number of ways. Temperature, wind patterns, precipitation, and changes in relative humidity. All of those factors affect the biology of vectors, making, in some cases, the vectors reproduce more rapidly, feed more rapidly, and when a vector's feeding, it's biting you and me, making, in some cases, the life cycles faster so that vector biology moves toward the spread of diseases. Now, this doesn't invariably happen. Some areas actually get drier, and in those areas, the risk of disease can decrease. So we have maps of Africa where we see some areas of increasing risk, some of decreasing risk. These are the direct impacts on the spread of disease. Climate change also operates through indirect pathways: desertification and drought, changes in vegetation, hydrologic changes, and so on. So, for example, if a river hydrology changes and the riverbank ecology changes, that can change the habitat and it can promote the growth of such vectors as tsetse flies, which can then enhance the spread of trypanosomiasis, Chagas disease, and affect more people. So many indirect ways in which climate change working through the ecosystem and through weather patterns can promote the spread of disease. Let me give you three quick examples. Dengue fever is a disease that is endemic in the Americas. The forecasts that climate modelers gave us beginning several decades ago were that dengue would spread as climate change progressed. We now have cases, endemic cases in the U.S. in Florida, Texas, and Hawaii, a new observation over just the last few years. Malaria is perhaps the vector-borne disease to which most people in the world are exposed. Very complicated disease dynamics. Many of the influencers of malaria are outside the climate change world, but climate change certainly changes malaria risk factors. In places where the weather's warmer, then malaria can expand its range, and that includes not only farther from the equator, but it also means moving up mountains. So we're seeing malaria now at elevations where it hasn't been seen before. The good news is that in some places, as rainfall drops, malaria risk is expected to decrease. The third and final example is Lyme disease. This is a tick-borne disease, and this is one that we're familiar with in this country. It began in a small area off the Long Island Sound. It has been spreading over time since then. It's up in the Midwest now and down in the South. And you can see over coming decades, the modeling predicts that it will expand considerably. It'll be one of our gifts to Canada by about 2050. And interestingly, some areas such as Florida that are currently at risk will see diminished risk as various features of climate change proceed. So a complicated story, and one that requires a lot of complicated analysis. How we use climate science in public health is we look at some of the climate models and projections that are made. This is a picture of the globe, which is divided into geographic segments. Then weather forecasts are made for each segment based on meteorologic data and other data. Then those are combined with health data, timelines showing temperatures and various diarrheal diseases, in this case in Canada. So we know something about the pattern of disease responsiveness to meteorologic factors. We forecast some of those meteorologic factors, put it together, and generate useful public health information, such as this disease may be likely to break out in this location in 20 or 30 years at the rate climate change is progressing. Let's be sure to build capacity in the laboratories for diagnosing it. Let's be sure to ramp up a surveillance system, and so on. So this is, in very quick review, the way we take climate science, merge it with public health approaches, and set out to protect the public.
That was Dr. Howard Frumkin, Professor of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences at the University of Washington, recorded on November 17, 2016, at a symposium under the theme, When the Next Pandemic Strikes, Are We Ready? Dr. Frumkin's comments were entitled, What Climate Change Data Can Tell Us About the Emergence and Spread of Diseases. When he gave this talk, Dr. Frumkin did not yet know that only 6 weeks later, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta would abruptly cancel a 3-day symposium on climate change, where he had been invited to speak. Breitbart News hailed the cancellation as being due to the Trump effect, where agencies are revising their position on climate change. 2 days after the CDC announced that they were canceling their climate change summit, Scientific American wrote, the conference is now back on, but not at the CDC. The event will take place on February 16 at the nonprofit Carter Center in Atlanta. TUC Radio will follow the story. If you have any information on the upcoming event or the topic of climate change and public health, please contact us by email. The address is tuc@tucradio.org. Or send a letter to TUC Radio, Post Office Box 44, Calpella, California, 95418. Or post to TUC Radio's Facebook page, TUC-Radio. This info is also on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.